Mr. Chairman, I'm going to change gears a little bit and put, you're going to put on your mathematical thinking caps, because I'm going to talk about how things work in the current school funding system from here on out. I'm kind of surprised that we're talking about Montana school funding history. We went all the way back to Lincoln and habeas corpus, but we did. What I'm going to talk about today are two budgeted funds, the debt service fund and the retirement fund, and how those two funds works. I'll be doing this for the ELG next time, and then the time after that we'll get into the general fund, and that's when I'll then bring that to you guys in September of this year. Before I start, I want to recognize a couple, a group and a couple people in that group. We have a coffee clutch that is just a staff in the budget office, in tax policy and research, in OPI, in the legislative fiscal division, and the legislative services division, that meets every 2 weeks and teaches each other about school funding. And just so happened that the last time we talked about these two funds, so I thought I'd bring them to you. And I've cribbed a couple of slides from Janelle Mickelson's presentation on the debt service fund, so tip of the hat to Janelle. Okay, a budgeted fund is a fund that's supported by property taxes, and a district school board must prepare a budget in advance of the year in which the budget is to be spent and levy the property taxes to support it. There are other funds that are not budgeted, like the Impact Aid account, the miscellaneous programs account, that are not budgeted funds because they don't receive property taxes. However, all the funds at the end of the year, whether they're budget or not, they must report the revenues, the expenditures, and fund balances at the end of that school year. I'm going to show you some picture or some numbers here regarding the budgeted funds that the legislature has created and required school districts to set up, and there's 11 of them, from the general fund through the building reserve. And I'm just going to go through quickly the purposes of these funds. The general fund, as you know, is the all-purpose fund that pays for, in budgeted about $2 out of $3 is budgeted in the general fund. Transportation is for the home-to-school transportation of students. It can be used, well, to pay bus drivers and the labor costs and the gasoline costs of the buses. The bus depreciation itself, that fund is used to buy buses or bus barns. The tuition fund is set up so that if you have students that are going to other districts and you need to help kick in some money for the for that tuition, this fund is set up for that. The retirement fund pays for the Social Security, Medicare, TRS, PERS, and unemployment costs of a school district, and I'll be talking about that a little bit later. The adult education fund is set up to teach certain adult education classes. The non-op is an interesting one. It's a very small one. Schools are allowed, once they run out of students, to remain open for 3 more years before they have to close their doors, and the territory that that school district encompasses stays with that school district, but they still got to take care of the buildings, they still got to take care of the place, so that you've still got a budget for that non-operating school for 3 years. The technology fund is used to buy technology and computer access, fiber optics, that kind of stuff. The flex account is an account that was set up in 03 that is kind of like a mini general fund. However, the state only puts the money into it once in 1994, I believe. there is a rule that says the flex fund may levy taxes up to 25% of the amount of the state contribution, but the state contribution has only been that one time in 04. The reason it's so big, though, is because it's got money that's transferred from other accounts sometimes into that account. And this is one you really got to look at the distribution, geographical distribution of the money in this fund, because a big chunk of it is in the east, of course, in the oil and gas districts. The debt service fund, which is again what I'm going to be talking about today, is for the payment of principal and interest primarily on bonds that are sold for building buildings and improvements to infrastructure. The building reserve is where the district saves up money for buying a future building. And again, over on the right, you could, two columns, you can see the share of each of these budgeted funds in total and the amount of property taxes that are levied. Now, the retirement fund, the district doesn't levy that. That's levied through the county, and we'll see that in a few minutes. Okay, this is the same kind of data, but now I wanted to look at budgeted versus actual. And the last year we have actual dollars was in 2011, because we're right in the middle of 2012 right now. So I've got the same thing, the share of expenditures, and you see that the actual spending was $1.263 billion at the very bottom, whereas schools budgeted $1.43 billion. And so they're over budgeting. And you can see which funds they're basically over budgeting. In general fund, they spend 99.7% of what they said they were going to budget. And that's true year after year after year, and mainly because we've got caps on the general fund. The transportation fund is a little bit less than that, but it's fairly close. Now, the bus depreciation fund, they only spend about 20% of what they budget, because school districts are using that as a savings account to save up money to eventually buy buses or bus barns. And so you'd expect that because of the purpose of the fund, it would behave like that. The tuition fund is small enough, don't have to worry about that one, but the retirement fund, about 90% of that is spent every year, so they're over budgeting a little bit of that. You'd think that maybe they could tighten that up, but they haven't. I mean, this is a practice that's been going on for years, that there's about a 10% excess that they're budgeting over what they really spend. And then you can look down and see the building reserve is another one that's used as a savings account, and so you'd expect that kind of behavior with that fund. The flex fund, again, is another one that's a savings account, and the debt service is pretty much spent every single year. Okay, so I'm going to talk about debt service first and then retirement and take you through some of the math that OPI and school districts have to go through. Now, what we're talking about here is when a school district wants to build a building and it wants to sell a bond for a certain amount of dollars at a certain interest rate, it goes to the market, the market buys the bond, then the district has to provide for debt service payments, usually about 20 years, that the district has to pay the bondholders back in terms of debt service payments. So how does, and there is a state program, it's a state GTB program, to help school districts with that debt service. So the first thing they need to do is get taxable values from the Department of Revenue. And these, every year they go through this data transfer process where they get taxable values. They've got to get A and B from the prior year, and that's not very hard to get. And then you determine the school district eligibility annually between OPI, or annually by OPI, between December and early January. So here's the timeline that they go through every single year to figure out the debt service GTB eligibility. First, you look at the budgeted A and B and the current fiscal year adopted budget, which is received in September. So in September, they've got to figure that out. OPI receives the final determination of taxable values by December 1. Now, remember that certified values are always given to the school districts in August, so there's a little bit of time before December 1 before there's a final determination. And OPI and TPR, basically, Tax Policy and Research, and DOR, go through this negotiation process, that's all I can call it, to say, well, you didn't get this number right, well, we don't think you got it right, and they finally figure it out by December 1st. Then they perform a reasonability check on the taxable values and the A and B and so forth. And then they calculate and test and verify the facility guaranteed mill value per A and B. And I'll get into that in just a minute. And they do all that before February 1st and then report it to school districts by, I believe, by March 1st. Okay, so what's an eligible district? Because not all districts are eligible for this GTB. So you're eligible if your district mill value, in other words, your taxable value divided by 1,000, that's what a mill value is, per A and B is less than the corresponding facility guaranteed mill value per A and B statewide. And that facility guaranteed mill value, here's the formula. The district value divided by the district A and B, you compare that to the statewide taxable value, mill value divided by 1,000 times 1.4 divided by the statewide A and B. So 1.4 is a number that's in law that's set by the legislature, and it can go up and down. It used to be 121%. Now it's 140%, which means that more schools are eligible for GTB at 140 than it was at 121. And if you want to increase that state share for debt service, you can raise that number. And just to note that tax increment financing districts are excluded from the taxable values, statewide taxable, and the district, if it's in the district. Yeah, like Great Falls would have their TIF taken out. Oh, how much? Approximately. Mr. Vice Chair, Mr. Senator Jones, statewide taxable value is about $45 million for a TIF compared to $2.3 billion for the total taxable value statewide. Okay, what kind of bonds qualify? Well, only general obligation bonds qualify. If you have another kind of bond, a revenue bond, you're not going to get GTB for it. Okay, so the facility entitlement is another lever that the legislature has to affect the amount of state share that goes into paying for debt service. And in law, it's allocated that there will be $300 per A and B for elementary per year as an entitlement to pay for debt service, $370 for middle schools, and $450 for high schools. The state share of the entitlement is this formula. You'll see the same thing in retirement. It's 1 minus the district mill value per A and B divided by that facility guaranteed mill value per A and B, which has the 140 in it. And then they take that state share and they multiply that. It's got to be a number between 0 and 1 as a percentage. Multiply that times the total facility entitlement or the current debt service, current year debt service obligation. So you probably better look at your handout on this one, unless you've got really good eyes. I'm going to just take you quickly through the math of this. Suppose a district wants to build a $400,000 building at 4%, and it sells a bond for $400,000 at 4%, and I figured that the principal and interest on that bond would be about $30,000 a year for 20 years. So $600,000 with interest is what this $400,000 bond is going to cost. Well, it just so happens that 100 kids in this elementary times $300 for the entitlement, that also equals $30,000. So they're going to get the whole $30,000 shared between the state and the local because the actual debt service equals the entitlement. If they wanted to build a bigger building, anything in their debt service above that $30,000, the district's on its own. They have to pick it all up on their own. But they are eligible for cost sharing through the GTB program for at least $30,000. So here's the math. $2.3 billion is the statewide taxable value. That's on a per mill basis. Each mill statewide generates $2.3 million. There's 102,000 elementary students. in the state. So that ratio, 140% of that is $32.17 statewide. So now you compare the local mill value per A and B. This district has a value of $2 million, a mill value of $2,000, divided by the number of kids, which is 100. So that's $20 per A and B for this district. So look at the 20 compared to the 32. It's less, therefore they're eligible. So now you figure out, well, what share of that's the state share and what's the local share? Well, you work through that formula and you find out that the state is responsible for 38% of the $30,000. So the 38% times the 30 means that the state will pay the district $11,349 every year for the 20 years. That's not quite true, and I'll get to that in a minute. But in terms of paying for their debt service, the difference is $18,651, and that both those numbers total to $30,000. The reason I said that it's not quite true is because there's also an A and B calculation in here, which I haven't shown. If you lose students, you're going to lose a little bit of your entitlement. You're no longer going to get your entitlement of $30,000, and so that's going to be reduced a little bit. So now let's figure out the mill levy you need to pay for this $18,000 that's your share. Well, it turns out with $2 million worth of taxable value, you're going to have to pay 9.33 mills by each taxpayer on their property. Now, if there had not been any 38% GTB, the taxpayers in that district would have had to pay 15 mills instead of the 9.33. And so you see what the effect of the GTB is on the tax burden in this district. Senator or Representative S.
Mr. Vice Chair, Jim, so is that percentage locked in for the 20 years then?
No.
In spite of?
Every year it's recalculated. And so that's why if a district is on the cusp where it may or may not get GTB for debt service, you got to be careful about what you tell your taxpayers. You can't tell them, well, this is going to be forever, because it's not going to be. And by the way, all these calculations are done in most cases before the bond is sold so that you can tell your taxpayers, look at what we've done for you. We're only going to charge you 9 mills instead of 15 mills. Okay, here's just a balance sheet of in the latest year of the debt service fund. It started out with $14 million in ending fund balance. The property taxes came in at 38, non-levy of 3, state reimbursements and advances were 7.4, and proceeds from refunding bonds 108. Some years the proceeds from refunding bonds because the interest rates are really good, they buy back the bonds they have outstanding, and then they sell new bonds at a lower interest rate, and so you see a big infusion of cash from proceeds. So anyway, the total available is $63 million. The total dispersed to bondholders in 11 was $45 million, and the ending fund balance was $18 million. So the ending fund balance in this year went up. However, this shows a history of several things here. Ignore the red line for a minute. The blue is the property taxes, the red in the middle is non-levy, and the green is the state GTB payment. The yellow line is the ending fund balance in that account from 2000 to 2011. You see that in 11 it went up, but it's been fairly steady over the 12 years or so that this picture shows. The red line is the state share, and originally the state share back in the early aughties was fairly low. It reads off the right scale. It jumped up there in the middle, 04 and 05, and it's jumped around between 15 and 25% since then. Now, the state has control over this because it appropriates the amount of money. Like we saw in the last slide, that the amount of money was $7.4 million in 11. That had actually been cut from what the legislature had appropriated by the governor in his powers under 17-7-140, I believe. But the legislature sets that appropriation, and it's been, this is the history of what's allocated. And you can see that the highest it ever got was 9.7 in 08. And the reason I want to show you this is because of the percentage pro date rata allocation. When the legislature doesn't appropriate enough money, and it really never knows how much to appropriate because you don't know who's going to sell a bond and who's going to get their voters to vote for selling a bond and who isn't. So some years it's short. And so the money is then allocated to each district on a pro rata share. And so if you look in 04, 05, only 81, the 8.4 million that was allocated was only 81.63% of the total needed across the state if the true formula were going to be followed. And that's happened not so much lately, but it did back in the 90s quite often. Okay, retirement. And again, you probably want to go to your sheets because this is kind of hard to see. I've shown you this once before, and I thought I'd go over it again. It's a little convoluted the way the retirement system works. The districts have to pay Social Security, Medicare. They got to pay retirement for their teachers and their non-classified staff to TRS and to PERS. 7.47 in the TRS case, 6.88% in the PERS case, and they got to pay unemployment insurance. On average, that average is about 15.3 cents on every wage dollar in the districts. So what I've shown you here is two districts in a county, District A and District B. They calculate those costs. They hand off those figures to the county. Actually, to the county superintendent, the county superintendent that you vote for every year. Marcia Davis is the one in Lewis and Clark County. So she then has these costs that she has to now collect money to pay. And so she says, where do I get my money? She looks at the county retirement accounts and determines what the non-levy revenue is in those accounts, what the fund balance reappropriated is in those accounts, figures out what the state GTB is going to be, and that's going to vary by county depending on your wealth again. And then the rest is going to be paid for by permissive, non-voted property taxes. So she levies all the money that equals the amount of costs that the districts are going to have to pay. And because taxes only come in twice a year, the county superintendent can only distribute this money to the school districts twice a year. However, back to the school districts, because the school districts are going to pay the actual bills for these costs. And then the school districts, once a month, pays the federal government, the Social Security and Medicare accounts. It pays the teachers' retirement system and the public employees' retirement system and the Department of Labor's unemployment costs. And the state kicks in some money, too, for the state contribution to TRS. Okay, so that's that one. And now I'm going to show you for 11 some balance sheets for the county accounts and the district accounts. The county accounts began the year with $23 million. They had retirement taxes of $85 million, non-levy revenue of $12 million. This is principally oil and gas interest. They used to get House Bill 124 block grants, but since 04, they have not. And then they get state retirement GTB of $30 million. So the total available is $150 million. What they paid to school districts was $119 million. And so they were left with an ending fund balance of 31. Again, an increase. But I think it's been fairly steady for that account over the years. Here's where you have the big ending fund balances. Beginning fund balance of 50 at the district level. You add up all the retirement accounts at the district level. you add up the non-levy revenue, interest earnings, payments from the county, that's the $119 million. So they have $172 million available. And then the districts make their payments to Social Security, TRS, PERS, and Department of Labor of $120 million. And they have left over $52 million in their accounts. Now, $52 million divided by $120 million, basically, which is what they're spending, means that, what is that, 50 divided by 120 is quite a high percentage number. However, they may or may not need it because they're allowed 35, they're allowed to hold 35% in ending fund balance in their school district retirement accounts because they have cash flow problems, because the money only comes in twice a year, but they have to pay it out once a month. So what's the proper percentage? I'm not sure. Here's a history of the county retirement revenues, and again, the blue is the property tax, the red is the non-levy, and the state GTB is in green. The yellow is the ending fund balance, and you can see that it's risen recently. It's like it showed, it's at $52 million currently. And the red line, again, is the state share reading off the right-hand side. And the state share is somewhere just between 20 and 25% of the total revenues for this account. Okay, that's the county side history. And then this is a simple graph. It's after the money's transferred to the school district, what are its revenues? Well, the vast majority is what comes from the county and a little bit of non-levy revenue distribution along with that. And again, here's the district ending fund balance is the yellow line. And I put the rule there that no more than 35% can be held in reserve, and the rest has got to be reappropriated.
Mr. Vice Chair, for Mr. Standard, on that 35% reserve, it's you have no idea why they picked that number. We took a look at that a number of times, and it's growing very, very high, and it doesn't earn the interest rate that it would if it was held with the regular state TRS. Why? What would be the reason? And I understand the cash flow issues, but there wasn't a school out there that had issues beyond about a 20%. Why? What would be? Why are we? Do you have a theory why the reserves are increasing? Because they have increased substantially in the last 4 or 5 years, held at the local level.
Mr. Chairman, the 35% was the number that applied to both the general fund and the retirement account way back before. I believe that the general fund was changed somewhere in the mid-90s because we made payments to schools on a 10-month basis, more regular basis than we had been doing in the past, and therefore they didn't need the 35% in the general fund. The general fund, as you know, is 10%. But still in the retirement fund, the GTB goes out twice a year and property taxes come in twice a year. So they only get their money twice a year, but yet they got to pay it out on a monthly basis. And why the 35%, I don't know. There was another part to your question.
Mr. Vice Chair, well, it has increased because obviously they had to do it two times a year before this, and the math won't support a need for 35%. They do like, in fact, the variability between the schools is enormous. So there seems to be a reason that we've had a gradual increase in money stored here. I'm just curious if you had an idea why it was. If the same rule you dictated exists since 07, when your previous yellow line was quite a bit lower. In other words, there's an increase in the percentage held in reserve now over what there used to be in this area. Why is that? Or and you may not know the answer. I was just curious if you'd thought about it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just let my eye calculate here. It looks like the ending fund balance is going up at about the same rate as the total revenues. And so, therefore, as a percentage of the total, I believe it's not all, it hasn't varied all that much. The second point is, though, that what you said is true, that it varies greatly by district. Okay, so I'm going to go through this. I got two more slides here. I'm going to go through the math of how this works, and it's fairly similar to the GTB formula for the debt service. So districts figure out what they need in terms of Social Security, Medicare, TRS, PERS, and UI costs. They subtract any fund balance, and I'm using numbers here, $400,000 is for this district, this county, I'm sorry. This is fairly close to Beaverhead County's numbers. And they subtract their fund balance reappropriated and any non-levy that they have. So that means they need $380,000 from the county to get this. They send that number to the county. The county looks at what its fund balance is and what its non-levy is, and let's say it's $10,000. So the county needs $370,000 from the taxpayers and from the state to GTB to pay off these costs for this year. So this is the math they go through. They take the taxable value from DOR, net of TIFs. So the mill value is $18,000 for Beaverhead County. Statewide, it's 2.26, and I believe it's not the same as the other one because I'm off a year. They take prior year elementary A and B in the county and in the state. Now the statewide GTB ratio is 101.21. It's not 140, and this is one of the levers that the legislature has, can up or down to increase the state share in retirement. Happens to be 1.21 now and has been ever since it started. So then you do the math, and the county's elementary meal value per A and B is $21.71. Statewide, it's $26.95. Is the county less than the state? Yes, therefore they're eligible. Well, how much are they eligible for? You go through the formula, 1 minus the district meal value per A and B divided by 121% of times the statewide meal value per A and B. They're eligible for 19.4% share for paying for that $370,000. So 19.4 times the $370,000 is $71,952. So that's what the state is going to transfer to the county for the retirement share. The county is going to have to come up with the $298,000 difference. So it's going to go to the taxpayers to get that almost $300,000. So I've just added them together there and showed you that they both add up to $370,000. So then the county mills that are levied are 16 mills for the retirement costs of the county. And that if we had not had this GTB program, the county would be levying 20.34 mills. And so it saves them around 4 mills because of this program. So that, in two nutshells, is how the district debt service fund and the retirement fund works. And the September meeting, I believe we're not going to be doing this in June, I'm going to talk about how the district general fund works. And then finally, we're going to get to what did 379 do? Any questions?
Well, I'd like to thank you, Jim and Dan. Very informative. Really appreciate you taking the time to explain this in a more detailed fashion. I appreciate the fact that you're also presenting it to the Education Committee as well as both presentations, and I hope we can advance the knowledge level, particularly in this particular area. So thank you. Hope we can